Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Health Insurance, What Everyone Needs to Know. This webinar and tele-learning series is brought to you by Can-Do Multiple Sclerosis and the National Multiple Sclerosis Society as part of our monthly series. You can view an archived version of all of our webinars on our website at mscandu.org. My name is Laura Coyne, and I'm a Programs Manager for Can-Do MS. Your moderator this evening is Doris Lill, the Senior Manager of Programs and Services with the National MS Society. Can-Do MS transforms lives. We deliver educational programs on exercise, nutrition, and symptom management to inspire and motivate long-lasting change for those with MS and their families to help them thrive. Please visit the Can-Do MS website, mscandu.org, to learn more about Can-Do MS's online and nationwide in-person programs. Can-Do MS is excited to partner with the National MS Society to bring you 15 webinars in 2016. At this time, I would like to introduce Doris Lill. Doris?
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. The mission of the National MS Society is to help people affected by MS live their best lives as they stop MS in its tracks, restore what has been lost, and end MS forever. We are pleased to have you join us in tonight's program, and you can explore other society programs, services, resources, and connection opportunities at nationalmssociety.org. We will save about 10 to 15 minutes at the end of this webinar for questions and answers. If you do have a question, please post them in the chat feature located on the left of your computer screen. To submit a question, type in the small box that says Chat with Presenters. I would like to encourage you to be a part of this interactive discussion. This presentation is being recorded and will be archived on Can-Do MS's and the National MS Society's websites. Because this is being recorded, all telephone lines have been muted. The topic for tonight's webinar is health insurance. We know that obtaining and maintaining health insurance coverage is a major concern to many people with MS. Maintaining health insurance is critical to having control over one's health and access to care and medications. But it can be confusing to navigate the different sources where insurance might come from, what the process or potential barriers to enrolling might be, and keep track of key dates to access your benefits. We are confident our speakers this evening, Kimberly Calder and Sherry Perry, will clarify this very complex and oftentimes confusing topic. Kim Calder has been advocating for people with serious and chronic illnesses for over 25 years, about 15 with different cancer organizations and nearly 13 with the National MS Society. She is the Director of Health Policy in the Advocacy Department of the National MS Society and spends most of her time trying to create change in health insurance and Medicare laws and regulations to help make quality MS care accessible and more affordable. Sherry Perry is the Benefits and Health Insurance Manager in the Services Department of the National MS Society and has been with the Society for almost 10 years. As a member of the Benefits, Employment, and Health Insurance team, her primary focus is on health insurance issues, and she interacts with people affected by MS daily in addressing their benefits and insurance concerns. She trains staff members on health insurance concerns, updates National MS Society staff on current health insurance issues and changes, and helps to identify trends people may be experiencing in accessing care and coverage. Thank you so much, Kim and Sherry.
Thank you very much, Doris, and hello to everyone on this call. We have a very limited amount of time to talk about a very big and complicated topic. So as a big picture overview on health insurance geared to people with MS, this will not be an explanation of everything you might want or need to know about health insurance, but you will get the big picture on how to get and keep health insurance at different times in your life, and this is a very good place to start. As you know, fall is open enrollment time for most types of health insurance, so this is also a very timely topic. We think of health insurance basics and describe them as what everyone needs to know, because understanding how to get and keep health insurance at different times in your life is a good thing for everyone to have, whether or not they have MS. We'll describe it in terms of what people with MS need and ask us about the most, but please understand that most of this information is not unique to multiple sclerosis. Between this presentation and the companion article that was emailed to you today or posted on the CanDo website for your reference, as well as all the information that we've included on where you can get more details and one-on-one help when you need it, you'll have a lot of what you need to make informed decisions about health insurance. And you will have to make informed decisions about your health insurance from time to time, and we want to make sure that you make good decisions. Very specifically, we'll review the key facts about the major types of health insurance, including employer-based coverage, individual plans for people who are not eligible for employer coverage, Medicare, Medicaid, and some others. And along the way, we'll share tips about how to use your coverage wisely, plus where and how to find various programs that can help pick up some of the costs for people with MS. I said we talk about different types of health insurance coverage, so let me clarify. When I say a type of coverage, I'm not talking about different insurance companies. I'm talking about the source of coverage. As we describe the different sources of coverage, we're describing how these are defined right in the law. Who provides the coverage? The employer or Medicare or Medicaid or the Veterans Administration or so on? These all have legal distinctions and rules describing rights and responsibilities for everyone involved. The key to understanding distinctions between different types of coverage is knowing who each one of these is designed to insure. In other words, exactly who's eligible. So we'll review eligibility, when and how to enroll, and generally what's covered. And we've used these same key elements to describe virtually all types of coverage in the online article, so you'll have that as a reference. And for each type, we've added suggestions on who can help answer your questions or solve problems, plus tips about costly mistakes that often trip up people with MS. That's information from our own experience of helping people with MS, and just very good information for you to have as a reference. The article also includes lots of click-on hyperlinks for more background or details on a topic that you may want additional information about at some point, or just to get the definition of a term. Okay, so let's get started with employer-based group insurance. Most people are or will be covered by an employer's group plan during some, if not most, of their lives. And as you'll see, getting health insurance because you're qualified as a member of a group is different than getting coverage when you are not part of a group. The great majority of employers in the country today offer health insurance to their employees, and usually, but not always, to the employees' spouses. Healthcare reform imposed lots of new government requirements on employer health plans, but employers still have a lot of control over many aspects of it, including whether to offer coverage to retirees, to part-time employees, or working spouses if their own employer also offers group coverage. Employer-based plans can be administered by an insurance company or by another entity altogether, but in either case, they'll tell you when and exactly how you enroll. Understand there may be a delay between the date that you enroll and the date that your coverage takes effect. And after you first join up, you'll have annual enrollment periods to re-enroll, and your employer may offer a choice of health plans from which you can choose. If you have a choice of plans, carefully consider your options. The least expensive one may not offer the best value for you in the long run. They will also give you general information about what's covered and what's excluded from coverage. In fact, we now have to do that by law. You now have the right to get detailed information before you decide about enrolling, including which drugs are on the formulary, who's in the provider network, whether there are limits on benefits that really matter to you, such as X number of visits to a physical therapist in a calendar year, and so on. People in group plans have several sources of help. And as I said before, stricter laws now mean that these plans are required to share a lot more detail with enrollees than ever before. That's very good news for people with complex healthcare needs. Your first go-to source for help for most employer plans is simply the customer service number on the back of your member ID card. The other key resource is the person or the department within the employer's office that's responsible for employee benefits. And here's a piece of advice about any and every type of health insurance. If there's a detail that really matters, such as whether a certain drug is or is not covered, and for example, how much of a cost to you, make sure you see it in writing. You can be trusting, but please look to have it verified in writing. It's also easy to make costly mistakes with any type of health insurance. So here's a few common errors that we hear from people in employer group plans. They often didn't plan their transition from employer group coverage to Medicare. Now, Sherry's going to go over Medicare more thoroughly in a few minutes, but I just want to emphasize something. You know, most of us get very used to relying on others to handle the details of our health insurance when we're working age, when we're employed and someone else is doing that work for us. Usually somebody in the personnel office or maybe a very friendly person within the insurance company. It can be pretty shocking, therefore, to realize that as you leave the workforce and transition away from employer coverage to Medicare, there's a ton of decisions that you have to make on your own. And you'll have to continue making choices as the years go by. You'll have to replace that old reliable source of information about your former employer's plan with some good reliable experts in Medicare. Lots of people with MS or other health problems have to stop working earlier than they plan to and apply for Social Security Disability Insurance, SSDI, to replace their paycheck with disability benefits. People that qualify for SSDI payments eventually become eligible for Medicare, but it takes a long time before Medicare coverage starts, and people can become uninsured during that time period. The good news is that there are ways to bridge the gap between employer coverage and Medicare, including COBRA. You can now buy individual insurance on your own or Medicaid, and the best thing that you can do is plan in advance as much as possible. We'll talk more about all of those and have lots more information in the online article on the National MS Society's website and other resources. Other ways that people get in trouble with employer group coverage is by not using the doctors, MRI facilities, pharmacies, or other healthcare providers in your plan's network. Virtually all employer plans these days use networks of specific doctors and other providers. That's a double-edged sword. Using out-of-network providers means that you would only be covered for a smaller amount of the total bill or even possibly nothing at all. So be very careful. Please don't use out-of-network providers unless you absolutely have to. Lots of people make the mistake of assuming it's not worthwhile to appeal a denial or a limitation on their coverage. But if you and your doctor think that something should have been covered by your health insurer and it wasn't, make your case for why it should have been covered and appeal it. Insurers are very open to persuasive appeals, and new law assures that everybody has the legal right to at least two levels of appeal, and the MS Society has resources to help people with MS and their doctors do those appeals effectively. I cannot promise in advance that you're going to win an appeal, but many more people will win their appeals than many people would have expected.
So, Kim, what about when people lose their group coverage? Are there any plans available for people with pre-existing conditions?
Well, good question, Sherry, and I know it's a common concern among people with MS. As I mentioned before, there are now options for people as they leave or lose employer-based coverage, and those include COBRA, and we'll talk more about that. They can now buy their own individual health insurance plan, which we'll talk about in the next section. Some may even qualify for Medicaid if their income becomes very low. And you never have to worry about having a pre-existing condition anymore. The Affordable Care Act makes it very clear, very, very certain, that no one can be denied health insurance coverage from an individual plan or an employer plan because of a pre-existing condition. And Medicare and Medicaid never allowed anyone to be screened out because of their health. So now we're moving on to information about what people do if they're not eligible for employer group health benefits or Medicare or Medicaid. We get a lot of questions from people in those circumstances, so here's the answer. They can buy their own individual policy for themselves and or their family members. These are often referred to as either individual or non-group plans because that's exactly what they are. Creating options for people who need individual insurance is a very big part of what the Affordable Care Act was all about. Remember, again, the Affordable Care Act assures no one applying for group or individual health insurance can be turned down or charged more due to a pre-existing condition. Where and when to get individual health insurance is different now, too. The Affordable Care Act also created a new way to buy health insurance if you need to do so on your own. That's what those online marketplaces, healthcare.gov, is all for. Healthcare.gov is the starting point for all online marketplaces because technically there's a marketplace for every state. They all offer one-stop shopping and free in-person assistance in choosing and enrolling in plans no matter what state you live in. As an alternative to the marketplace, individuals could go through an insurance broker that can help set them up with their own individual or family policy, but there's pretty compelling reasons to use the marketplace anyway. The marketplace route is the only way to apply for and get tax credits based on your household income that get applied immediately to the premium. Marketplace tax credits are available to anyone whose yearly household income is between 100 and 400% of the federal poverty line. And 400% of the federal poverty line in 2016 was about $47,000 for an individual or about $97,000 per year for a family of four. And most people that do qualify for a premium tax credit end up paying less than $100 per month for their health insurance. Now, unless you have special circumstances, you can only buy and enroll in an individual plan at certain times of the year. The annual open enrollment period for individual plans starts November 1st for coverage starting the following January 1st. It ends on January 31st, but we would strongly encourage you not to wait until the last minute to enroll. It does take time, and those computer systems are pretty notorious for getting backed up. Otherwise, you may qualify for a special enrollment period if you move to a different state, if you have add dependents to your family, like you have a baby, if you lose coverage for some reason, and other circumstances. So, again, you can only enroll during certain times of the year unless you qualify for a special enrollment period. Also, marketplace plans are not intended for Medicare beneficiaries. These are not an alternative to Medicare supplemental, sometimes referred to as Medigap policies. If you have a marketplace plan, you should keep it until your Medicare coverage begins, but you'll no longer qualify for a premium tax credit from the marketplace plan once you become eligible for Medicare. So most people do drop their marketplace plan at that point. What benefits are covered in individual plans is now regulated by law as well, and the Affordable Care Act lists 10 categories of benefits that must be covered by individual health plans. Note that these 10 essential health benefits, as they're called, are just broad categories. For example, prescription drugs must be covered, but individual insurers are free to decide which prescription drugs to include and which ones to exclude from their formulary, and exactly how much your share of the cost of any covered drug will be. We know that the out-of-pocket costs that people with MS often face are staggering. But another thing that the Affordable Care Act did that's a step in the right direction is to cap annual out-of-pocket costs for everyone in both group and individual plans. The annual limit goes up a little bit each year, but was roughly $6,600 per year for an individual in 2016, or about double that for family coverage. Evidence-based preventive services like mammograms and other cancer screening tests depression screening, recommended vaccines, a range of those preventive services are also covered, and before you finish paying your annual deductible. And you don't even have to pay a copayment for those if you use an in-network provider. Additionally, there's no lifetime limits on benefits, so you never again have to worry about outliving your health insurance. But insurers are still allowed to limit coverage in other ways. They can and do exclude certain medicines, certain services, types of equipment, certain types of providers, all kinds of things. So there's still a lot of variation in benefits depending on what the insurance company decides. So watch out for those details when you're choosing a plan. All individual health insurance policies are one-year contracts, so you do need to re-enroll every year. And note, benefits and costs change, so do comparison shopping. There's good news for people who need an individual policy in terms of who can help them do that comparison shopping and fill out those application forms and answer the questions. Healthcare.gov, as I mentioned before, also provides professional, no-cost counselors. They're called navigators, or sometimes called assisters. They provide similar services as traditional insurance brokers, but only for health insurance purchased through healthcare.gov. Traditional insurance brokers can also sell individual policies outside of the marketplace, but again, you can only get the tax credit if your income qualifies you, and you get your coverage through the marketplace. Other changes from the Affordable Care Act assure that all of us in group and individual plans can get access to lots of detailed information about health insurance plans before we commit to enrolling. These include summaries of what's covered, a list of all the drugs covered or excluded from a certain plan, which doctors and other providers are in the network, and explanation of your rights to appeal. Also, everyone is now entitled to two levels of appeal at least. And again, it's worth the time and the aggravation of filing the appeals. And your health plan has to tell you how to do it. These are all extremely valuable tools that can save you lots of time, money, and aggravation. So we hope you will make good use of them. If your health insurance plan uses a network of providers, as we mentioned before, as virtually all health employer and individual plans now do, please use the providers in your network as much as possible. Another big mistake that is just making assumptions that turn out to be wrong. Please don't assume that your doctor is in the network, even if he or she was in the network last year, or that the specific drug or certain benefit that you had last year is still covered, or that it's covered at the same level that it was last year, or that you don't have to worry about any guidelines. The bottom line here, folks, is that these details change often, and it's your responsibility to know that and to act accordingly. The amount of tax credit or subsidy that I've mentioned you can only get when you buy a policy through healthcare.gov is determined by what you put on the application about your anticipated income for the coming year. And you are responsible for reconciling that come tax time if your income changes. If your income went down from that estimated figure, you'd get an even bigger tax credit, so your marketplace health insurance would cost less. But if your income goes up, you may have to reimburse the government for those amounts that you were subsidized. So the very smart thing to do is to make sure that the marketplace file on you is kept as accurate and up-to-date as possible. And you can update that marketplace file anytime at all.
So, Kim, most working age people and their families get group health coverage from an employer, and those who don't can buy an individual policy from healthcare.gov. If their healthcare, if their income's around $47,000, that, and they can only buy an individual policy at certain times of the year. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly right.
What's the one thing you would recommend people with MS do to make sure they're choosing the best plan for their needs?
Well, that's the challenge. And what I would say to that is what you should do is talk to the navigator, this professional that you can speak with through healthcare.gov, and tell them right away exactly what your needs are. There's no point anymore in not disclosing your MS. Tell them exactly what prescription drugs you've been on and what you might need. And just based on your past experience, if there's certain doctors or hospitals or pharmacists that you need access to, and the types of services that you think you might need in the coming year, such as rehabilitation or occasional MRIs, and work together so you can look into those before you commit to any particular plan. And with that, I'm now going to turn it over to Sherry, who's going to review some basics of Medicare for us.
Thank you, Kim, for that wonderful overview of individual and group insurance plans. Now we get to talk about Medicare. You become eligible for Medicare with age, disability after a 24-month wait period, or specific diagnosis like ALS or end-stage renal disease. Original Medicare, Medicare Advantage plans, and prescription drug plans have never had pre-existing condition exclusions. So it's really important to pay attention to enrollment deadlines, because if you miss them, you could face a penalty, which will add to the cost of your monthly premium. The penalty can add 10% to your monthly Part B premium. And there are several enrollment periods offered by Medicare. The first is your initial enrollment period. And that starts, it's 7 months long, and it starts the beginning 3 months prior to the date that you became eligible, the month you become eligible, and 3 additional months after you become eligible. There's also a general enrollment period for those who may have missed their initial enrollment period into Medicare Part B, as in boy, and that's from January 1st to March 31st. Coverage will begin July 1st if you enroll during the general enrollment period. Medicare Advantage plans have additional enrollment and disenrollment periods. Those include the annual open enrollment period that you can review and change your Medicare options, and that's October 15th through December 7th every year. There's a disenrollment period for Medicare Advantage plans from January 1st to February 14th each year, and you can disenroll from a Medicare Advantage plan and go back to original Medicare. There's also a 5-star special enrollment period, which allows you to enroll one time per year in a plan that has a customer service rating of 5 out of 5 stars. There are certain life events and circumstances that may trigger a special enrollment period, and those are things like joining or dropping group coverage or moving out of the service area. One of the more less known special enrollment periods with Medicare is if you are getting Medicare because of disability and are under age 65. It's kind of like getting a clean slate with Medicare when you do turn 65. If you're enrolled in Medicare because of disability and you pay premium penalties, once you turn 65, you no longer have to pay those premium penalties. You also get a special enrollment period for Medicare Part B as in boy and Part D as in dog. You'll also get a guarantee issue enrollment period for Medigap plans. Medicare covers many types of services, and you have some options for how to get your Medicare coverage. There are 4 different parts to Medicare, and each different part helps cover specific services or can combine all services into one plan. Original Medicare consists of Medicare Part A, which is hospital insurance, and that helps pay for things like inpatient hospital stays, skilled nursing, facility care, home health care, and hospice care. Medicare Part B, as in boy, is medical insurance, and that helps cover things that are medically necessary, like doctor visits, outpatient care, many preventive services, diagnostic tests, and durable medical equipment. Medicare Part B also covers infusion therapy medications, including Tysabri, Lemtrada, Novantrone, and steroids. Medicare Part C, also called Medicare health plans or Medicare Advantage plans, are another way to get your Medicare benefits. They combine Medicare Part A and B, and sometimes Part D as in dog, the prescription drug coverage. Medicare Advantage plans are managed by private insurance companies that contract with Medicare. Medicare Advantage plans cover everything that original Medicare covers, but the cost structure is a little bit different. And the 4th and final part of Medicare is Part D, as in dog, or the Medicare prescription drug coverage, which we'll talk about in more detail in a few slides. All services provided by Medicare are subject to limits and criteria for coverage. For example, Physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech and language therapy services all have an annual cap on the amount of therapy that will be covered in 1 year. If you're approaching that limit and your therapist feels you need more therapy, they can send in documentation to get approval for more therapy. This is just one of the many examples of the types of limitations that can be placed on some of the services offered by insurance companies and Medicare. Medicare by itself pays for a limited amount of long-term supportive services, and typically they have strict coverage guidelines. For example, there you can get up to 100 days of care in a nursing home, but only after you have spent 3 days in a hospital, and you must be admitted into the hospital to get that coverage. Home health care may be covered by Medicare, but the eligibility requirements are very strict, and Medicare typically approves coverage for only 4 to 10 hours a week. If you have a chronic illness or disability and need extensive long-term supportive services, you will probably need to find resources other than Medicare to help pay for those services. Helpful resources include Medicare.gov or their toll-free number, 1-800-MEDICARE, an MS Navigator at the National MS Society, Medicare Rights Center, National Helpline, or their website, MedicareInteractive.org. Every state offers free Medicare counseling to people to help them understand their Medicare options and to make sure that people on Medicare are accessing all the help that is available to lower their cost. These programs are often called State Health Insurance Assistance Programs, or SHIP, although the name is different in some states. The SHIP help may be available in person or by phone. As you can see, some of the common errors with Medicare are similar to other coverage sources, especially when it comes to deadlines and thinking that appealing denials or limits in coverage isn't worthwhile. Other common errors include not planning for dependents coverage, not knowing how to coordinate Medicare coverage with employer, retiree, or other coverage, and not taking advantage of Medicare savings programs. We've just gone over the basics of original Medicare and Medicare Advantage plans. This shows that there are a few different ways to get your Medicare health benefits. One option is to get original Medicare that consists of Part A and B only. The second option is to get original Medicare with a supplemental insurance. And the third option is to get a Medicare Advantage plan. With all three of these options, you can get drug coverage if you need to, that's an option. There can be benefits to either of these options depending on your specific situation. If you choose original Medicare, you will have a broad network of providers to choose from across the United States. Your options for supplemental coverage include plans you may already have in place, like group coverage from a spouse, VA benefits, or a Medigap policy. A Medigap policy, it's the only policy you can purchase to help supplement Medicare costs. The other ones have to already be in place. So if you have coverage in place already, you want to make sure that you understand which coverage is considered primary and which coverage is considered secondary. That's going to vary greatly depending on your unique circumstances, but it will have a big impact if you get it wrong. You may end up being responsible for the entire cost of any services that you obtain if you don't understand how those benefits coordinate. One benefit to enrolling in original Medicare with a Medigap policy is that these Medigap plans have the potential to help make Medicare affordable by filling in most of the gaps that are in original Medicare coverage. The drawbacks is they often can cost several hundred dollars each month, and they may come with pre-existing condition exclusion periods. As I said earlier, Medicare Advantage plans cover everything that original Medicare covers, but the cost structure is different. So instead of paying 20% for an MRI or an appointment with a specialist, there is often a predictable copay or set amount for these services. Another benefit of a Medicare Advantage plan is they have an out-of-pocket limit for medical service. Not prescription services, but medical services. So out-of-pocket limits are typically no more than around $6,700 and sometimes as low as $4,000, ensuring that even those with high medical costs will have a limit to what they must pay out-of-pocket for medical services. If you're considering a Medicare Advantage plan, you want to make sure to check with your healthcare providers to find out what plans they accept, since most Medicare Advantage plans offer limited coverage outside of their network. which is one of the downfalls of a Medicare Advantage plan. Both of these options can be very useful for people that utilize the Part B, as in boy, services. Like if you utilize physical therapy or if you take infusion therapies, looking at Medicare Advantage plans or getting a Medigap plan is a good place to start. Prescription coverage is optional no matter if you go with Original Medicare or Medicare Advantage. Medicare Advantage plans with drug coverage and standalone prescription drug plans are offered by private insurance companies that contract with Medicare and allow people to choose their prescription coverage options. The structure is the same no matter if you choose a standalone plan or a Medicare Advantage plan. To be eligible for prescription drug coverage, anyone that is eligible for Part A and without qualified prescription drug coverage from another source. Again, it's really important to pay attention to the enrollment deadlines because if you miss them, you could face a penalty which will add to the cost of your monthly Part D, as in dog's premium. The initial enrollment for Part D is the same as Original Medicare, 7 months long, beginning 3 months prior to the date of your eligibility. The fall annual enrollment period from October 15th to December 7th, that's every year, and gives you a chance to review or change your Medicare options. We also discussed Medicare Advantage plans, enrollment and disenrollment periods, the five-star special enrollment period, and the special enrollment period when you turn 25. The same life events and circumstances may trigger an open enrollment period for prescription drug plans. Additionally, prescription drug plans, there's a rolling enrollment period, which is ongoing if you qualify for state pharmaceutical assistance programs or extra help, also called a low-income subsidy. That allows for ongoing or rolling enrollment, meaning you can switch plans once a month if you qualify for those cost programs. All prescription drugs listed on the plan's formulary are covered, or non-formulary drugs if an exception request or appeal of denial of coverage is successful. Again, every state offers free Medicare counseling to help people understand their options and make sure that they're aware of all the help that is available to lower their cost. I always encourage people to try to make a face-to-face appointment with their SHIP counselors. Other helpful resources include Medicare.gov and their toll-free number. Medicare.gov offers a plan finder tool where you can enter your drugs and compare options according to your coverage needs. And again, the National MS Society and Medicare Rights Center both have call center helplines to assist in making these decisions. Some of the common errors are not enrolling when you're first eligible, not researching and enrolling in the best plan for your needs, not taking advantage of the low-income subsidy or state patient assistance programs if available, assuming financial assistance from patient assistance programs are always available, and not comparing plans annually. I'll hand it over
thanks,
to
Sherry. That was an awful lot of detailed information, and we don't expect everybody to memorize that. We have an awful lot of resources and sources of help to help you make those decisions as you move into Medicare. But what I think you heard is that in the big picture, when you do become eligible for Medicare, you have to make a choice. You're going to choose between organizing your Medicare benefits between traditional Medicare, where you could use pretty much any doctor or other provider that accepts Medicare payment, or you can choose a Medicare Advantage plan, which limits your choices to in-network providers, but possibly costs you less in the long run. Is that correct?
That is correct, Kim.
Okay. And back to me. Now, of course, there are some other sources of coverage, again, described in that online article using the same construct. Eligibility, when and how to enroll, generally what's covered, what resources are available, and what some common errors may be for you to avoid. But one that I particularly want to call out here is Medicaid. Medicaid is government-sponsored health insurance for people with lower incomes. Every state government controls most aspects of their state's Medicaid program, and typically people who qualify for Medicaid pay nothing for their health care services. the Affordable Care Act tried to standardize eligibility across all states, but a 2012 Supreme Court decision disagreed with that, and so they left the states with that determination. Currently, 29 states have chosen to standardize their eligibility for Medicaid based exclusively on your residence and your income. We're hoping that the rest of the states will eventually also expand Medicaid, because once that's done, I will finally be able to say that everyone has legal access to health insurance. Now, we know that access doesn't equal affordability, but that's another topic for another day. I also want to mention Medicaid waiver programs. These are special vehicles that state governments can use to sort of test out new or different ways to deliver and pay for healthcare services in Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program known as CHIP. There are several different types of waiver programs, including some that provide in-home long-term care, but only for people that meet very specific income and other criteria determined by each state government. Because eligibility and the services in these waiver programs vary so much, there's not much more I can say about them now, but I do want to know that there's something you might want to look into. And then, of course, there's Veterans Administration and the health insurance programs for all the folks in the armed services and other government employees. They all have their own insurance plans and programs, and they all have separate rules for eligibility and enrollment, risks and benefits, exclusions, sources of help, and so on. There are now more options for covering children, too. I mentioned that CHIP, the Child Health Insurance Program, that provides very comprehensive health coverage for kids in every state that are from lower-income households, but not necessarily households whose income is so low that they would qualify for Medicaid. Lots of colleges also offer their own group health plans for students, though the benefits can be pretty limited. So research them carefully to know what your teenager will or won't be covered for. The option for a lot of teenagers now is to stay on mom or dad's employer-based coverage, because the Affordable Care Act assures that they can stay on mom or dad's employer coverage up until the age of 26. Now, something we don't have time to describe well enough tonight is all of the ways that people can combine coverage if they're eligible for more than one source. You've heard Sherry talk about Medicare combined with a Medicare supplemental plan known as Medigap. Some people are qualified for both Medicare and Medicaid, or Medicare and VA, and so on and so on. There is no harm in looking into the eligibility of secondary insurance now that you know who to ask for different types of coverage. But if or when you can combine coverage, understand that one will be your primary coverage that pays the bulk of your care needs, and the other is secondary. They will have to be coordinated, and that can be tricky in itself. Now onto gaps and transitions in coverage. Now that you understand how eligibility determines who gets what type of coverage, let's talk about those circumstances when eligibility is a lot less clear, like those times in life when you're in transition. Many of you are probably familiar with COBRA. It's a federal law that assures continuity of coverage, allowing for any member of an employer group plan to remain in that group plan at their own expense for a certain period of time, depending on the qualifying event that made him or her eligible for COBRA in the first place. COBRA law is very specific about all the rights and the responsibilities for all concerned, the employer, the employee, or the dependent that's staying in the group plan. People that are deemed disabled by the Social Security Administration can stay on COBRA for 29 months, provided that they apply for COBRA within the first 18 months of the date that Social Security determined was the first date of their disability. COBRA is a federal law for employer groups of 20 or more. There is such a thing as mini COBRA for very small employers that offers the same type of continuity of coverage at your own expense in some states. There's also the same concept, call different things, for people that are in other kinds of group plans, like federal employees, people in armed services group plans, and so forth. But COBRA is very expensive because you're paying 100% of the cost of the premium yourself, plus a little bit of administrative fee. And, of course, it runs out eventually. Individual coverage from the marketplace is is now an alternative to COBRA, and losing employer-based coverage does qualify you for a special enrollment period for marketplace coverage. So you can buy into an individual marketplace at any time of the year if you lose employer coverage. But if you do enroll in COBRA, don't assume that you can drop it and enroll in a marketplace plan if or when the COBRA gets too expensive for you. Once you've chosen COBRA, you can only drop it and enroll in a marketplace plan during the annual open enrollment period starting on November 1st. Remember to plan for your dependents, too. Employer coverage ends for lots of reasons. Not only because MS causes disability for the working person and they eventually go on Medicare, also when the working spouse goes into Medicare or even passes away, his or her dependents have to get coverage from somewhere else. Also, just think about it, dependent status can change, and it can change because the child is no longer dependent, they age out, they may go on to a college or university plan. Legal separation or divorce can also change dependent status for spouses and so forth. Perhaps the most difficult scenario involves losing employer coverage due to a disability and waiting to enroll in Medicare. Once you've applied for disability from SSI, SS Administration, you're attesting that you are no longer able to work or earn. So paying for COBRA to bridge the gap until Medicare begins is probably unrealistic unless you've really saved for it. Remember, Medicare only kicks in for people on SSDI after 29 months. That's 2.5 years after the date of your disability. The system is set up with a 5-month waiting period before you get your first SSDI check. Then you have to wait another 24 months while you're receiving SSDI checks until you're actually eligible to enroll in Medicare. So during that 29 months, you want to be enrolled in a spouse's employer plan, if at all possible, or you go into COBRA, or you buy an individual policy through the marketplace, and if you don't have an income at that point, you're probably going to qualify for a pretty nice tax credit from the marketplace, so that would be much more affordable than you might initially think.
So, Kim, what's the best thing people can do to plan for going on disability and waiting for Medicare coverage to start?
Well, a good question that we get asked a lot. I'm glad to say that we do have some good, solid answers to that one now. The first thing I would recommend is that you think very seriously about submitting your claim for disability benefits very carefully. Read up on how to do that, go through that application process for you and your doctor. Your aim is to make that application so airtight that it gets approved the first time around, not denied, so it takes years. The MS Society has resources. We have an SSDI application guide for you and your doctor. Also, look at the calendar and count backwards. Figure out exactly how many months you'll have to pay for COBRA or an individual policy before Medicare kicks in. And with that, I think that's pretty good time for Sherry to step in and start talking about cost help programs.
Thank you, Kim. Many people are unaware of the cost help programs that can significantly lower out-of-pocket costs. The Medicare Savings Program is a program for original Medicare and Medicare Advantage enrollees. Eligibility for this program is limited to individuals who have low income and limited assets. And you can apply for this program through your state Medicaid office or a SHIP counselor. Medicare savings programs often have higher income and resource guidelines than full Medicaid. And in most cases, you must have Part A and meet those income and asset guidelines. And many states will figure your income and resources differently, so it's important to make sure you're understanding what your specific state guidelines are. Medicare standalone drug plans and Medicare Advantage drug plan enrollees can apply for below income subsidy, or also called extra help. This is offered to individuals who have limited income and assets and helps with their Part D as in dog costs, including monthly premiums, annual deductibles, and copay. One important note is that partial subsidies may be available to people who are over the stated income or asset limit. So if you aren't sure if you qualify or you think you might be over the limit, still apply and ask about a partial subsidy. You can apply and get more information through the Social Security Administration or a local SHIP counselor. And certain groups of people automatically qualify for the low-income subsidy or extra help and don't have to apply. So people with Medicare that are also getting full Medicaid benefits, people with Medicare who get supplemental security income, and people who get help from the Medicaid savings programs will automatically get extra help or low-income subsidies, and that will help significantly lower your drug costs. Marketplace plans, like Kim talked about earlier, do offer tax credits to help those with incomes between 100% and 400% of the federal poverty level. The tax credit is advanceable, so it can lower your premium payments each month rather than making you wait to file your taxes every year. People may also qualify for reduced cost sharing, which helps with co-payments, co-insurance, and deductibles if your income is at 200% of federal poverty level, which is around $23,760 for an individual and around $48,000 for a family of four. There are five nonprofit organizations that we're aware of that help with prescription costs for the MS disease-modifying therapies. As you can see, a few of them are specific to Medicare beneficiaries. This is because their assistance will count towards helping people get out of the donut hole for their out-of-pocket cost. The problem with the charity programs is that the funding fluctuates on a daily basis, and we can't predict when they will have funding. I wanted to point out that the assistance fund does also help consider helping with premiums and other incidental medical expenses when they have funding. We suggest that people check with these organizations as often as possible about their funding status. We try to check on a daily basis to see if they have funding. The drug manufacturers often help with the cost of treatment for qualified individuals who rely on their products. Unfortunately, they are limited in what type of help they can provide to people who are on government insurance programs like Medicare, which is why the charity programs become so important for people with Medicare, because this can sometimes be the only way to help pay for medications and to help get out of the donut hole or the gap. Other options, although not as common, can be to check with your specialty pharmacy for any assistance programs or check with your doctor about samples. If you're unable to find assistance with the cost of your medication, we encourage you to contact the manufacturer and let them know that you are at risk of not adhering to your treatment to see if there's anything else that they can do to help at this point. Other suggestions can be to reach out to local representatives and become an MS activist and talk to them about what can be done legislatively to make sure the cost of treatment is reasonable. It can also help to be a savvy consumer. This covers all sources of coverage, not just Medicare. When dealing with medical bills that you already have, it can be helpful to attempt to negotiate with the billing parties. Consumer Reports National Research Center reports that over 93% of people that try to negotiate their medical debt are successful in getting a lower cost. You want to make sure to attend to the bills quickly. Inquire about financial assistance, especially if you're working with a major facility. Consider negotiating with cash or immediate payment. If that's not possible, request a payment plan or a partial discount. It never hurts to ask. If you do have insurance, determining how much is covered under your plan and what limitations might apply can be helpful. It's always good to check and compare prices whenever possible using lookup tools. A lot of major insurers typically offer lookup tools on their websites. You can also ask for estimates before your treatment or appointment. Prices can vary greatly, so don't be afraid to shop around. Health savings accounts are tax-advantaged medical savings accounts available to people who are enrolled in a high-deductible health plan. Like any healthcare option, health savings accounts have advantages and disadvantages. As you weigh your options, think about your budget and what healthcare you'll likely need in the next year. Some employers will contribute to your HSA accounts, making the savings even more. Please note that once you have Medicare, you can no longer contribute to a health savings account, but you can still draw from the funds that are already there to pay for your medical expenses. It's also important to compare options every year. Plans often make changes on an annual basis when the contract is over. And utilizing your appeal rights, we have mentioned this a few times throughout this presentation, studies have shown that a high percentage of appeals that are followed all the way through can be successful. And with that, I'll hand it over to you, Kim.
Thank you, Sherry. We're just about to wrap up here, but I just wanted to say in closing, we realize an awful lot of information. We really hope it helps you understand the big picture and additional sources of help. But I think you people are also savvy enough to understand that health insurance is constantly changing. Laws get tweaked and refined, and everyone is desperately searching for ways to spend less on health care. Health insurance companies, as well as government agencies that run Medicare and Medicaid, are constantly looking for ways to cut costs as they try to pay only for care that's proven to be effective. So here's a list of the current trends that the society is watching on your behalf. Generally, more of the cost of care are falling on enrollees, especially in employer plans. There's higher deductibles, there's copays and coinsurance. There's tiered benefits offering you discounts to use generics or, some lower-cost drug or even less costly clinics and providers. There's much more second-guessing by health insurers of doctors' treatment decisions. That's part of the reason that we encourage people to use their appeal rights, because as much as health plans only want to pay for what's been proven to be effective, that's not always a black-and-white thing. Sometimes you have to argue that something is very effective for you, even if it hasn't been proven to be 100% effective to their satisfaction for an entire population. These provider networks are increasingly small networks, and they are especially quite narrow networks that exclude a lot of specialists, people with MS may need. And unfortunately, employers are also cutting back on eligibility for dependents in some instances, although I can honestly say that is not as bad a scenario as some had originally predicted. Medicaid plans are using more and more managed care types of practices. Narrow networks, second-guessing for doctors' and nurses' prescriptions, a lot of requirements like prior authorization requirements and so forth. Health savings accounts, very popular, as Sherry explained to you. And so on. These are just some. We are constantly watching these all the time, and we are very active in advocacy at both the state and the federal levels. And, again, we would invite you to become MS activists if you're not already. So you can please monitor our work and hopefully lend your voice and your story to our advocacy work. We're going to turn this over to questions with Doris in a moment. I just want to review quickly some of the additional resources. We've mentioned a bunch of times the article that hopefully many of you already received an email, but if you haven't, it is also available on the CANDA website. Medicare, the office itself has a 1-800 number, and those SHIC counselors are available in every state. Healthcare.gov website is very large, comprehensive, and very helpful, even if you need to work with someone to help understand some of the details once in a while. And that's the same with the marketplace. The marketplace websites are very comprehensive, and again, there are professional service providers to help you with all this process involved. We also can try to help connect people with financial planning and elder law experts. Very often, some of your needs kind of blossom away from health insurance and get into all other aspects of your financial life. Again, we urge you to become an MS activist. And to do that, you could go on the National MS Society's website. And in the search bar, you can just type in MS activist. And you should receive information there about how to sign up with us. And with that, I think I'll turn it over to Doris so that we can hear your questions.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Kim and Sherry. Now we're going to start working our way through the questions that were posted in the chat feature. Please keep in mind that if we don't get to all of your questions this evening, you can contact an MS Navigator and pose your question. And you'll see on the screen there's a website as well as our toll-free number, which is 1-800-344-4867. And so we're going to go ahead and start with today's first question. And this one comes from John. Although a policy cannot be canceled except for non-payment, what the insurance company can stop writing a policy. Once the company informs the policyholder, it will no longer write the policy. How long do you have to obtain a new policy?
I'm sorry, how long do you have to obtain a new policy? Was that the question?
Yes, if basically your company stopped writing that policy.
Mm-hmm. I think what John is referring to is a practice that has happened in the past when insurance companies decide that they're simply going to stop issuing a certain type of health plan. They must, by law, they must notify everyone well in advance. Generally, we're not talking about canceling anyone's policies. They're simply saying, we're not going to sell that one as brand new policies in the future. So I hope that's clear. I hope you're not referring to people who have literally had their insurance policies canceled. If a policy were ever to be canceled, perhaps because an employer went bankrupt and it was an employer's plan or some other circumstance like that, the law would cover you fairly well to allow for a transition. There have been very few complete failures of large insurers in the country. So I don't know of a particular instance in which this has happened that's been totally catastrophic. Perhaps you could contact us separately if there's something very egregious happening and we can try to transition you as well as possible.
Okay, great. Thank you. Our next question is a theme. There have been several related questions about it, and this goes back to Sherry, what you covered regarding prescription assistance programs. And so obviously folks who have Medicare or Medicaid and they have, you know, high copays or, you know, however that works out, and then you've got folks on private insurance. And so what options do folks have based on the type of insurance that they have for prescription assistance?
For prescription assistance, it definitely depends on the type of insurance you have. If you have Medicare, you can contact all five of the nonprofit organizations that were listed. They all help with Medicare. Three of them only help with specific government programs, so the other two can't. If you have private insurance, you can apply to those. The manufacturer patient assistance programs often help with people that have private insurance or group coverage, group or individual coverage. They cannot help people with Medicare monetarily because Medicare is a government program. So they may help in other ways, like maybe giving some samples to help get people through until the nonprofits that do help, until their funding becomes available. So depending on the type of insurance you have, we always encourage people to check with those five nonprofits no matter what type you have. And then from there, if they're all out of funding, if you have private insurance, you can still check with the manufacturer. If you have Medicare but still can't get funding, we suggest that you still go back to the manufacturer but let them know that you are at risk of not adhering to your treatment because you've tried every resource and there are none available.
Okay, great. Thank you. The next question is another one that has appeared in various forums on the chat feature, but it's basically what circumstances qualify for special enrollment. So there's been questions about, you know, losing your job, quitting your job, so scenarios where you are no longer employed, does that qualify as special enrollment?
Mm-hmm. I'll do that one as best I can. I would encourage you to double-check these things and look in writing to get this stuff verified to assure that your exact circumstance really does meet the qualifications for a special enrollment period. But generally speaking, a special enrollment period is really when your insurance might stop for no reason or no fault of your own. So if your employment ends, even if you quit the job, you do have a choice there of either going into COBRA or perhaps buying an individual policy through the marketplace. And if you choose to go the marketplace route, you would qualify for a special enrollment period, so you would not have to wait until November 1st to start that process. But generally speaking, special enrollment periods really are set aside for those unusual circumstances, such as you pick up and you move to a different state. So now the health insurance plan that you had been in before isn't even available to you or helpful to you because the network of providers is back in your former state. It's when you have a baby or you get married and there's somebody else to add to the plan. There's a number of different special enrollment qualifications, and I'm sure I'm not going to remember all of them. They also may be somewhat unique to either individual group insurance or Medicare. So please use our resources to make sure that the event that you're concerned about really does qualify you for a special enrollment period.
Okay, great. Thank you. We also have several questions regarding to having Medicare, but then also having private insurance through an employer, like through a spouse, and how do you determine which one is primary and should you keep both? And is there a way to kind of talk about that scenario in general terms?
Well, there's a lot of variabilities on deciding which is primary and which is secondary. With Medicare especially, typically it can depend on the size of the employer. And some of the key terms that Medicare uses is actively working. So if you have group coverage from a spouse that's actively working, that group coverage typically, and I think a good term to use with Medicare is it depends. But typically, if you have group coverage from a spouse that's currently working, that coverage is primary and Medicare is secondary. But if you have retiree coverage, then the retiree coverage may be secondary and Medicare is primary. So that's a really good question, and that's something you really want to make sure that you get right, because if you were to get COBRA and you already had Medicare, because you've Medicare Part A is free, your Medicare would be primary, not your COBRA. But if you didn't realize that and didn't think that you needed to sign up for Medicare Part B as in boy, thinking that you had COBRA, you may be responsible for all the costs, because in actuality, the COBRA is secondary, and the secondary insurance will not pay for anything until the primary insurance does. So it's really important to make sure you get that right, and I encourage anyone who's not sure to contact some of the resources, either the SHIP counselors or an MS navigator, to help you work through that, and whether it's primary or secondary.
Okay, great. Thank you. Medigap policies. Are they available in all states? Do they differ from state to state, and how do folks go about finding them?
Medigap policies are available in all states. If you're over 65, there's a federal law that guarantees Medigap policies be available during a guarantee issue period, and that guarantee issue period is when you're eligible for Part B and 65. You have to meet both of those to have a guarantee issue
to be able to enroll without being charged more for a pre-existing condition. If you're under 65, that is going to vary by state. Some states have more generous laws and allow you to enroll in a Medigap policy under 65. They even have some plans that cannot charge you more for a pre-existing condition. But it's going to vary by state. So you can connect with the State Department of Insurance to find out what Medigap plans may be available for people under 65. We found that typically there are plans across the country available. There may be only a few of the Medigap plans available, but the bigger issue is that if you're under 65, you can be charged more by the federal law. So you want to check with your State Department of Insurance to see what the specific laws are for your state. Okay, or call an MS
Thank
navigator.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Okay. We have gotten several questions as to whether health insurance providers are required to cover all of the FDA-approved disease-modifying therapies in their formularies.
I'll be happy to take that one. Unfortunately, the answer to that is no. In fact, they have been assured the right to exclude whichever prescription drugs they want to exclude. This is one of the reasons that we urge people to work very hard to review the formulary lists before they commit themselves to a plan and to pay attention to changes in the formulary because they will change, unfortunately, often change from year to year. Generally speaking, we find that most plans, employer plans, and even the Medicare Part D plans are pretty generous. They cover at least most, if not all, of the MS disease-modifying therapies. But there are exclusions. I cannot deny that. Okay.
All right. The next question, which is trending, so to speak, is folks who are currently receiving SSDI and are becoming eligible for Medicare and kind of what the process is to go from one to the other. Does that make sense?
Sort of. Sherry can back me up here, but basically, well, remember, SSDI is income. That is, SSDI is disability insurance. So that is a program that is replacing your income that you were earning when you were working. Because you qualify for SSDI, puts you on the path to become eligible for Medicare, but it takes quite a while. Essentially, once you are disabled and you have a disability date from the Social Security Administration and you begin receiving SSDI checks, again, the replacement for your paycheck, you will receive those monthly, and after 24 months, then you will automatically be eligible for and enrolled into Medicare. As you approach that 24-month period, the Medicare agency will reach out to you and begin to notify you of your Medicare, the onset of your Medicare benefits and the decisions you will have to make. Is there anything you'd want to add to that, Sherry, because you probably talked people through that a little more one-on-one than I have?
I think that, once you get your Medicare card, it's important to look at your options and make the decision. And, again, just looking at estimating your annual health care needs can give you an idea of what the best path is going to be for you for your Medicare options. And, of course, calling an MS Navigator.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank you. We have a couple of varying questions about HSAs and FSAs. Are they one and the same? Do they expire at the end of each year?
This is Sherry. I know that HSAs and FSAs are different accounts, and typically FSAs expire on an annual basis. You have to use up the funds in March. I would encourage questions like that to speak to either about health savings accounts, to speak to an MS Navigator or a financial planner, someone from the IRS can definitely talk to more about those details because those can vary as well. But there are different, HSA and FSA are different plans.
Okay. Great. Thank you. And then the last question for tonight is regarding, so providers can't deny coverage. But can they raise deductibles, copays, out-of-pocket premiums, maximums, et cetera, based on, various diagnoses like MS?
No. The Affordable Care Act has absolutely outlawed the ability of health insurance to be costed out based on your health. That is no longer legal for anyone that's in an employer-based group plan or any type of individual health insurance policy, and that was never the case for Medicare or Medicaid. The only instance in which the pre-existing condition can frankly really matter in an application for health insurance is possibly with a Medigap policy. That's why we were talking about the difference between the availability of Medigap policies for people who have a disability versus people who are eligible for Medigap policies because they've turned 65.
Great. All right. Well, thank you both so much. And so just a reminder, as we wrap up this evening, you'll see on the screen the website where you can ask any questions that we didn't get to today or any ones that you think of after the fact. There's also our toll-free number where you can contact an MS Navigator and ask any additional questions that you have. I also want to go ahead and highlight some of the National MS Society resources that we have around insurance. We have several publications that deal with access to care and information on appealing different sorts of coverage denials. We have an insurance-specific webpage, which you'll see at the bottom of the slide, nationalmssociety.org/health insurance. And it has a wealth of information on the different types of health insurance coverage, whether it's private, employer-sponsored, Medicare, and more. Again, don't forget, email your questions to healthinsurance@nmss.org. You can email there, or as I said, you can call toll-free 1-800-344-4867. I want to thank Laura and all of our presenters this evening for this great opportunity.
Terrific. Thank you so much, Doris. And Kim and Sherry, great job presenting and providing such an enormous amount of information in a short amount of time. I would also like to thank everyone out there for participating in tonight's webinar. As a reminder, on the CanDo website, mskendo.org, you will find all of our archived webinars, e-news, and library articles. And you can also submit a question to the Ask the CanDo team, which will be answered by our team of MS experts. The next presentation in our webinar and tele-learning series will be on Tuesday, October 11th, at the same time, 8 o'clock Eastern Time, Together in MS, Supporting Family and Friends of People with MS. This is an opportunity for those living with MS and their support partners to look together at the wellness and challenges providing support to a partner brings on. As always, you can register for the webinar and tele-learning series free of charge on the CanDo MS website, mscandu.org. At the conclusion of the webinar, we will send you a copy of the slides and the companion library article, Making Best Use of Your Health Insurance. Look for links on the right-hand side of the email in the blue box. For those participating live tonight, you will see a survey appear on your computer screen. Your feedback helps us to continue to improve our webinar and tele-learning series. And again, you will be receiving a PDF copy of tonight's slides by email. Thank you, and have a great evening.